Hi, Dave Emery here, side one of For the Record program number 818, titled Can You Put Lipstick on a Nazi? Part 3, subtitled Update on Ukraine, plus time permitting, a timeline of the development of Ukrainian fascism through the decades. This program is being recorded on November 6th of the year 2014. Before I begin the program, I want to alert listeners to the SpitfireList.com website, and in particular to some heroic contributions from a contributing editor who posts and comments under the name of Terrafractal P, as in Paul, T-E-R-R-A-F-R-A-C-T-Y-L. At the top of each description, each post that I have done recently, there is a link, as well as a link on the front page of the SpitfireList.com website that will enable you to get comments as they come. And it is worth subscribing to those, as well as to alerts about posts in the food for thought category, and also new For the Record descriptions and audio files as well. All of this is, of course, free of charge. No money is asked for that. And so I strongly recommend subscribing to the comments as well as alerts for posts and programs. Now, we are continuing our analysis of the ongoing situation, really a crisis in Ukraine, in that Russia and the West are squaring off. There are lethal, very bloody military hostilities and some saber-rattling on both sides, with the possibility that this could accelerate into a nuclear conflict. I think it is altogether important to cover this and what is going on, particularly since the U.S. media have been absolutely Orwellian in their coverage of this. I think also that the debacle in Ukraine has very strong implications for those of us here in the U.S. If the onset of fascism in Ukraine is receiving not only no coverage, but the fascist political and military forces are being hailed as Democrats with a small d, liberators, etc., I think there is more than a little cause for alarm for those of us here in the land of the brave and the home of the free, as the U.S. is unfortunately mistakenly called. There are a lot of brave people, not enough. There are some free people, but how long that lasts remains to be seen. In our last installment, For the Record 817, Can You Put Lipstick on the Nazi? Part 2, we were looking at the inclusion of not only explicit Nazi and fascist elements within the so-called moderate political forces that dominated the recent Ukrainian parliamentary elections, but also the adoption, or perhaps co-option, of some of the policy decisions and the elements of those fascist and Nazi parties by the so-called moderates. The title of the program, again, comes from the expression, you can put lipstick on a pig, but at the end of the day, it is still a pig. And the deliberate misrepresentation of these fascist elements as moderate or democratic. There are certainly people within the Ukrainian political ranks who are sincerely democratic with a small d and simply want to have the good life, so to speak. However, the moderate forces in general have, as I said, included the most virulently fascist and Nazi elements and have adopted many of their parties. Their policy platforms, I should say. Now, in the long series that we did about Eddie the Friendly Spook. That is Mr. Snowden, the gentleman I call the peach fuzz fascist, who in a similarly Orwellian fashion has been misrepresented as a crusader for social justice, a hero, etc. This is a fellow who is as far right as you can get. He favors eliminating Social Security, going back to the gold standard, and is a devotee, political devotee, of Ron Paul, who is linked, joined at the hip with people like David Duke, the League of the South, people who think the Confederacy was justified and think the South should secede again and are explicitly pro-slavery. Snowden wrote on a blog when he was posted to Geneva, Switzerland, as an officer of the CIA. This back in 2009, at the same time he was suddenly imbued with pro-humanitarian spirit and engaged on the operation in which he was engaged. He wrote, and I'm going to have to paraphrase slightly because we're on the air, he wrote that the elderly wouldn't be so effing helpless if the government would stop sending them those effing checks so they'd have to get up off their A blank blanks instead of lying around in hospital beds. I'm paraphrasing slightly, but that is the essence of it, including the use of the present participle F word, which obviously I can't do on the air. That is Eddie Snowden in a nutshell. The journalist, the prize-winning journalist Glenn Greenwald, who was his main journalistic leaker, so to speak, spent years as an attorney running legal interference for some of the most murderous Nazi and fascist groups, and specifically worked to block them from any civil liability when some of their acolytes and foot soldiers took their teachings to heart and went out and performed violent acts, including murder, against some of those ethnic groups whom they demonized. Lynn Greenwald is now being financed by Pierre Omidyar, the head of eBay, who has financed fascist causes around the world, including, as we've seen, the Hindu nationalist and fascist forces behind Narendra Modi, now head of state in India. And he also helped to finance the Maidan coup earlier this year that brought the OUNB fascist collaborators of the Third Reich, their heirs anyway, into power in Ukraine. And once again, an Omidyar-financed political figure in Ukraine is front and center. Now, her name is Svetlana Svitalina, last name Zalishchuk. I'm going to pronounce that Zalishchuk. I'm probably mispronouncing many of these Ukrainian names. Now, Zalishchuk is a key ally of Petro Poroshenko, the president of Ukraine. She's part of the Poroshenko bloc party. And what is so significant here is that Poroshenko tabbed her specifically to basically push the lustration laws. Those would purge the Ukrainian government of anyone. Ostensibly, they are anti-corruption laws. In effect, they are not only illegal, but would serve to further purge the Ukrainian political structure of anyone who was pro-Russian. And as we will see down the line, the lustration laws are in violation of EU and international law. The lustration laws were originally proposed by the fascist Svoboda Party, and the Svoboda Party and the Radical Party of Oleh Lyashko, L-Y-A-S-H-K-O, another explicitly fascist party, were among the elements who were huddled together with the other so-called moderate forces by Ms. Zalishchuk to, again, help to generate support for the lustration laws, which, although ostensibly anti-corruption, and Ukraine has been plagued by massive corruption, these laws actually appear to be designed to purge people of Russian ethnic affiliation or political affiliation, and they are in violation of EU and international law, according to a number of observers. So again, what we have is a, quote, moderate, unquote, Svetlana Zalishchuk of Poroshenko Bloc Party being tabbed by Poroshenko to generate support for the lustration laws that were generated by the neo-Nazi Svoboda Party, one of the OUNB heirs that came to power in Ukraine. And in that regard, she huddled together a number of the, quote, moderates, unquote, and people like the Svoboda Party and Radical Party in order to generate publicity, or to generate support, I should say, for the lustration laws. And again, never lose sight of the fact that she is one of the financial apples of Pierre Omidyar's eye. Pierre Omidyar, Glenn Greenwald's financial angel. He also is the financial angel of Svetlana Zalashuk. An article about that by Mark Ames appeared in the Pando Daily of October 30th of 2014. This is titled, Omidyar-funded candidate takes seat in new Ukraine parliament. And it reads in part, Ukraine just held its first post-revolution parliamentary elections, and amid all of the oligarchs, EU enthusiasts, neo-Nazis, nepotism babies, and death squad commanders, there is one newly elected parliamentarian's name that stands out for her connection to Silicon Valley. Svetlana Zalashuk, from the billionaire president's Poroshenko bloc party. By the way, Poroshenko's son was also elected to parliament. Continuing. Zalashuk was given the choice spot on the president's party list at number 18, ensuring her a seat in the new Rada, R-A-D-A, that's a Ukrainian parliament. Continuing, and she owes her rise to power to another oligarch besides Ukraine's president, Pierre Omidyar, whose funding with USAID helped topple the previous government. Zalashuk's pro-Maidan revolution outfits were directly funded by Pierre Omidyar. Earlier this year, Pando exposed how eBay billionaire and Intercept publisher Pierre Omidyar co-funded with USAID Zalashuk's web of non-governmental organizations, New Citizen, Chesno, C-H-E-S-N-O, and Center UA. According to the Financial Times, New Citizen, which received hundreds of thousands of dollars from Omidyar, quote, played a big role in getting the Maidan protest up and running, unquote, in November of 2013. Omidyar Network's website features Zalashuk's photograph on its page describing its investment in New Citizen. Zalashuk was brought into the NGOs by her longtime mentor, Ole Rybachuk, R-Y-B-A-C-H-U-K, a former deputy prime minister who led the last failed effort to integrate Ukraine into the EU and NATO. By the way, he was a key figure in Viktor Yushchenko's government, which basically did an Orwellian political makeover of Ukrainian history and legitimized the OUNB. Yushchenko was married to the former Ekaterina Chumachenko, a member of the top OUNB front in the U.S., the UCCA, the Ukrainian Congress Committee of America. She was Ronald Reagan's deputy director of public liaison, then married Viktor Yushchenko and became first lady of Ukraine. Continuing. Zalashuk is Ole Rybachuk's protege. He was a key Yushchenko aide. Zalashuk's photos also graced the Poroshenko bloc's website and Twitter feed as she emerged as one of the presidential party's leading spokespersons. The Poroshenko bloc is named after Ukraine's pro-Western president Petro Poroshenko, a billionaire with a lock on Ukraine's confectionery industry, as well as owning a national TV station and other prized assets. He came to power this year thanks to the revolution originally organized by Zalashuk's Omidyar-funded NGOs and has rewarded her with a seat in the Rada. Again, that's the Ukrainian parliament. The president's party tasked Zalashuk with publicly selling the highly controversial new lustration law, that's L-U-S-T-R-A-T-I-O-N, essentially a legalized witch hunt law first proposed by the neo-fascist Svoboda Party earlier this year and subsequently denounced by Ukraine's prosecutor general and by Human Rights Watch, which described the draft of the law as, quote, arbitrary and overly broad, and it fails to respect human rights principles, warning it, quote, may set the stage for unlawful, mass, arbitrary political exclusion, unquote. Lustration Law was passed under a wave of neo-Nazi violence in which members of parliament and others set to be targeted for purges were forcibly thrown into trash dumps. Chalushuk, however, praised the Lustration Law, claiming that the legalized purges would, quote, give Ukraine a chance at a new life, unquote. Shortly before the elections on October 17th, Zalushuk used her Omidyar-funded outfit, Chesno, unquote, to organize a roundtable with leaders of pro-EU and neo-fascist parties. It was called Parliament for Reform, and it brought together leaders from eight parties, including Zalushuk's Poroshenko bloc. She served as both NGO organizer and as pro-Poroshenko party candidate, the Prime Minister's People's Party, that's Arseniy Yatsenyuk, and leaders from two unabashedly neo-Nazi parties, Svoboda, and the radical party of Oleh Oleh Lyashko, L-Y-A-S-H-K-O, which was denounced by Amnesty International for posting YouTube videos of himself interrogating naked and hooded pro-Russian separatist prisoners. Lyashko's campaign posters featured him impaling a caricatured Jewish oligarch on the Ukrainian trident. Meanwhile, Zalushuk's boss, President Petro Poroshenko, has led a bloody war against pro-Russian separatists in the east of the country that left at least 3,700 dead after in a half year of fighting. By the way, thousands of people, scores of thousands, in western Ukraine have fled, or eastern Ukraine, I should say, have fled to Russia as refugees. Human Rights Watch recently accused Poroshenko's forces of indiscriminate use of cluster bombs in heavily populated areas that may amount to war crimes. Poroshenko's forces include neo-Nazi death squads like the notorious Azov Battalion, Azov, A-Z-O-V, or sometimes A-S-O-F, depending on the transliteration from the Cyrillic alphabet, is something we're going to talk about at considerable length in this program. As we will see, the so-called moderate forces have incorporated many people associated with the Azov Battalion. Last month, Poroshenko further cemented his ties to the extreme right by hailing Ukraine's wartime Nazi collaborators, the violently anti-Semitic UPA, as heroes. The fascist UPA participated in the Holocaust and were responsible for killing tens of thousands of Jews and ethnic Poles in their bid to create an ethnically pure Ukraine. Many UPA members filled the ranks of the Nazi SS Galicia Division. That's, by the way, the 14th Waffen-SS. The neo-Nazi right sector, which spearheaded the violent later stages of the Maidan Revolution, sees itself as the UPA's contemporary successors. Right sector's leader Dmitry Yarosh believes that any, quote, ethnic minority that prevents us from being masters in our own land is an enemy. Yarosh was just elected to the new parliament. By the way, Yarosh, head of Pravi sector, was the deputy defense minister in the provisional government. The defense minister was a guy named Andrei Parubiy from Svoboda. Andrei Parubiy, by the way, is now an advisor to Poroshenko, as is the former justice minister, the equivalent of our attorney general, a guy named Oleg Makhnitsky. He was attorney general and is now another advisor to Poroshenko. Another advisor to Poroshenko is a guy named Roman Zvarych, S-V-A-R-Y-C-H. He was the personal secretary to OUNB head Yaroslav Stetsko in the early 1980s. He served as justice minister under Viktor Yushchenko and in both of Yulia Tymoshenko's governments as well. Wrapping up the Mark Ames article, this week Omidyar Network's investment lead for Ukraine, Stephen King, accepted an award for Omidyar Network's role in the major new USAID-backed project, Global Impact Investing Network. Now, two posts about the lustration laws. Bear in mind that these are not only backed by Petro Poroshenko, but again, the Omidyar-financed Poroshenko ally Svetlana Zalushuk got together eight different political parties in support of the lustration laws, including the Radical Party and the Svoboda Party, both explicitly neo-fascist. This is from Yahoo News of October 9th of 2014. It's an Agile's false press story by Dmitry Zaks, Z-A-K-S as in Sam. Ukraine could sack up to 1 million officials with ties to Russian past, it reads in part. Ukraine's president approved a disputed anti-graft measure on Thursday that could see up to 1 million civil servants with alleged links to past Soviet or pro-Russian governments immediately sacked. The so-called lustration law, unquote, follows the example of other Eastern European nations that broke free of decades of Moscow's domination at the end of the Cold War, skipping down. The law removes anyone who holds a federal or regional government position for more than a year under Yanukovych, who is now in self-imposed exile in Russia, skipping down again. Lawmakers' initial failure to adopt the legislation last month sparked violent protests outside parliament that engulfed the building in the black smoke of burning tires and brought riot police out on the streets. As we saw last week in 817, those demonstrations were led by people in elements like the Svoboda Party, the Right Sector, and the Radical Party, basically explicit neo-Nazi parties, skipping down of the lustration laws. Their legality has also been questioned by the Council of Europe and business leaders who fear it will lead to a damaging exodus of competent bureaucrats. The legislation has been bitterly fought by the lawmakers representing Russian-speaking eastern regions, the power base of the former regime, and now partially controlled by separatist rebels. Even the president's own special representative on children's issues complained that it, quote, violates basic rights and freedoms of citizens, is anti-constitutional, and does not correspond to European judicial procedures or standards, unquote. Quote, it provides a way to settle scores with your political opponents, unquote. Children's Ombudsman Yuri Pavlenko, P-A-V-L-E-N-K-O, wrote on his Facebook account. Other clauses in the law bar anyone found guilty of backing separatist causes and anyone who worked as a prosecutor or held the top office when state agents shot dead nearly 100 protesters during the Kiev unrest, as we saw last week. And in previous programs, there are serious questions about who actually initiated that shooting, and it may very well have been a provocation. Skipping down again. The measures have already prompted the resignation of two top finance and economic ministry officials who are respected by the business community, but were hired by during Yanukovych's 2010 to 2014 presidency. And another article, this by Sarah Kaufman, K-A-U-F-M-A-N, in the Vocative blog of September 16th, 2014. Watch angry Ukrainian protesters throw a politician in the dumpster. Obviously, this was accompanied by a video. Skipping down. Despite a ceasefire that's in effect, there is no sign that things are settling down. On Tuesday, some activists of the extremist pro-Ukrainian party Automaidan threw a Ukrainian parliament member in a metal trash can, doused him with an unknown liquid, and threatened to light him on fire. It was all part of a demonstration outside parliament in which hundreds of members of the far-right parties of Ukraine, Right Sector, Automaidan, and Volia, V-O-L-Y-A, demanded the passage of law on something called lustration, unquote. Lustration in Ukraine means cleansing the government from its past by screening officials and often punishing them for involvement in the past regime. Punishments can include stigmatization or removal from office. The point of lustration for many Ukrainians is to ensure that corruption, the corruption that was so prevalent in the regime of Viktor Yanukovych, who was forced from office earlier this year, is eradicated. The law passed, but it's unclear what the net effect will be for members of parliament. And again, in effect, this offers a legal vehicle for the settling of political scores. Now, I'm going to review portions of an article that we looked at last week, and for the record, 817. This is from the GermanForeignPolicy.com blog of October 24, 2014, titled Nationalist Upsurge. By the way, GermanForeignPolicy.com feeds along the lower right-hand side of the front page of the SpitfireList.com website. Some key names here. Note Vitaly Klitschko, K-L-I-T-S-C-H-K-O. He is a key member of the Poroshenko bloc party of President Poroshenko. Opinion polls predict the victory of the, this was before the election, obviously. Opinion polls predict the victory of the Petro Poroshenko bloc, whose top candidate, Vitaly Klitschko, K-L-I-T-S-C-H-K-O, has been systematically groomed by the CDU-affiliated Konrad Adenauer Foundation. Note this, and there is discussion here about the Svoboda Party, the Liashko Party. Note Vitaly Klitschko and his key position within the Poroshenko bloc. He became the mayor of Kiev after the Maidan coup, and we're going to see that one of his top allies was a member of the Azov Battalion. He was killed in combat in August. His widow is also affiliated with the Azov Battalion, previously with the UNSO, and she is a key member of Arseniy Yatsenyuk's military council. Skipping, her name is Tatiana Chornovol, C-H-O-R-N-O-V-O-L. We're now going to discuss some of the people in the People's Front of Prime Minister Arseniy Yatsenyuk. Beyond the spectrum of overtly fascist parties, particularly the People's Front, the party of Prime Minister Arseniy Yatsenyuk, who had been put in power by the West, is campaigning with well-known right-wing extremists. Tatiana Chornovol, the former press secretary of the fascist UNSO organization, who in the meantime has joined the Azov Battalion, is the second candidate on the ballot of the People's Front. The People's Front has also established a military council to profit from the country's nationalist war frenzy. The military council also includes Azov Battalion commander Andrei Beletsky, B-I-L-E-T-S-K-Y. Beletsky once declared, quote, "The historic mission of our nation in this critical moment is to lead the white races of the world in a final crusade for their survival, a crusade against the Semite-led Untermenschen," unquote. His Azov Battalion has participated in the violent attacks on the Ukrainian parliament. These attacks began on October 14th, when the majority of the deputies rejected the motion for declaring October 14th an official holiday. The Ukrainian Insurgent Army, or UPA, which had also committed massacres on more than 90,000 Christian and Jewish Poles, was founded on October 14th of 1942. As we're going to see, the, quote, moderate, unquote, Petro Poroshenko did indeed name October 14th as a national holiday in Ukraine, thereby co-opting one of the demands of the Svoboda Azov Battalion Pravi Sektor Radical Party Milieu. And we're going to be taking a look at the inclusion of people like Andrei Beletsky, other Azov Battalion veterans, in the new Ukrainian parliament. The deputy commander of Azov Battalion, as we will see, has been named by the interior minister as the chief of police in Kiev. He will be heading up the constabulary in the Ukrainian capital. That bodes very poorly for political dissent or freedom of speech in Ukraine. However, we're going to talk about that more in Side 2. This concludes Side 1, for the record, program number 818. Can you put lipstick on a Nazi? Part 3, update on Ukraine and timeline of the development of Ukrainian fascism. This is being recorded on November 6th of the year 2014. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.